believe that ownership will be a big part of it. I believe that that will start to straighten out some of the things that are a bit more challenging with the current internet. Right now, you don't own any of your audience. That can be taken from you at any time, or that can just be shifted. One day your reach is X, the next it's Y, and you've got to pay more to reach the same number of people. Like, those rules suck, and they're not advantageous for creators.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. This episode is proudly brought to you by BlackBerry. Now, I know what you're thinking, BlackBerry, that's a blast from the past. They are still very much here and their product, Cylance AI, is at the forefront of using predictive artificial intelligence for stopping real-world cyber threats. Now, we all know that scams and phishing attacks are on the rise, but the reality is that while more of these attacks are powered by AI, it's not enough to just have humans solve for this. You need to develop even smarter AI in order to protect against bad actors. Cylance is the cybersecurity solution for businesses building the future of the internet, and it outperforms all the major competitors, detecting threats up to 13 times faster. BlackBerry is not only the most forward-thinking and effective AI solution when it comes to cybersecurity, they're also leading in the effort to support women working in cybersecurity, AI, and emerging tech. So it feels like there's really great alignment there with what we're doing at Women of Web3. You can find out more about Cylance AI by visiting blackberry.com or use the link in the show notes. Last week, we hosted a roundtable about the intersection of luxury and emerging technologies. And wow, that was a lot of smart women in one room. We had people who used to be at Vice and Burberry and just some amazing insights around things like how can you verify authenticity of products using blockchain and other emerging tech. We'll be holding more events soon, so do sign up to our newsletter via womenofweb3.co. Today, we're bringing back one of our best ever guests, and I don't say that lightly, that is none other than Lindsay McInerney. While some of you might not know her name, she manages to keep quite a low profile actually, but she's something of a legend in the Web3 and future internet arena. She was previously the global head of technology and innovation for AB InBev. They're the owners of huge beer brands like Budweiser and Corona. She's since then co-founded a blockchain entertainment company with Hollywood actress Mila Kunis. And she's also a very successful consultant and educator in this space under her advisory firm Black Sun Labs. Lindsay and I have become friends since she joined the podcast 2 years ago. But I would say I'm also a massive fangirl of her work. So you'll have to bear with me that I sound so delighted she's on the show. So without further ado, here's Lindsay. Welcome back to the show, Lindsay, and nearly 2 years later.
It feels like an eternity later, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Lots going on.
Yeah, the whole Web3 landscape has changed completely since you were last on the show.
The internet never stops moving. It's amazing.
Totally. And Web3 has kind of gone from this incredibly hyped up thing from when we were talking. I think you were on an episode around May 2022-ish.
Ooh.
Yeah, right when things all... I can't remember if I swear on the show or not, but went to shit.
I feel like you can't be in this space and not swear, Lauren. Like, come on, things have totally gone to shit.
Yeah.
And we're picking ourselves back up off the floor.
Exactly. I thought it'd be really interesting to have you back on the show to sort of partly share your learnings from the past couple of years, and partly we can just get into the weeds of like, what do we think is happening in this space? I think you'll have a really, really interesting perspective for listeners. I'm going to try and be careful not to be doing any like in jokes or things that we know because I've met you in real life and we know each other. But yeah, the first time maybe the second time we met was when we recorded on the podcast 2 years ago. And now you've come to be a sort of friend in the Web3 space. And yeah, I really admire everything you've been working on so far. Also very envious that you get to call Mila Kunis, the Hollywood actress, your co-founder. So, I mean, that is still pretty bizarre to me, but really cool. I'm going to stick with our new habit of starting with the most useful thing first, is that listeners of the show use this podcast to kind of think about like careers in this space and how can they get ahead, you know, strategies for success. And that includes hearing the mindsets and approaches of the prominent women in this space. So I was wondering, is there a sort of strategy or framework, or like I say, almost like a mindset that has really helped you or been a guiding principle for you?
Yeah, look, I think I've been really lucky to always just be able to follow my curiosity. Anytime I haven't, it's led to bad things. And every time I do lead with curiosity, I find myself in really interesting places. It connects me to really interesting people. It allows me to learn wildly interesting things. And yeah, I've been really blessed to be able to do that. I don't work very well inside the box anyways. You know, just been really fortunate enough to be able to, you know, to be able to lean into things that I find fascinating and, you know, and carve a path through. And I feel like, you know, the more time I spend doing, you know, doing life, I you know, I really do think that following your what naturally interests you and where your curiosity naturally takes you is like, you know, that's the dream. That's the when things start to become in flow and in synergy, and it feels really good.
I'm going to have to send you one of the previous episodes on this season with Bianca Lopez, who's a kind of digital identity and blockchain expert, but she's brilliant. But she also talks a lot about curiosity. And I think you two would have a lot in common in terms of also that things to do with sort of energy and flow, you know, the slightly more woo-woo side of things. But
yeah, but that's what makes us amazing as women, because we can tap into the IQ, but we can also tap into the woo-woo. And that is extremely powerful. I would love to meet Bianca, but like also that's one of these incredible things that you do is bring together really bright women and, you know, do it in a way where we can support one another and find ways to work together. So yes, and let's have a big party.
Okay, you're on. I'm keen to do that. So you've done a lot in the time that I've known you, and also if you previously started out with running the Stella Artois NFT project, and then off the back of the success of that, you got approached by what sounds like lots of different opportunities sent your way. Ended up co-founding a business with Mila Kunis, and you've also got your own consulting firm. Would you call it Black Sun Labs?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose how would you summarize the kind of things you've been working on the last couple of years, or like? How would you pigeonhole it?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that I really have the most fun doing is helping people understand fast-moving, highly technical concepts and figure out how they apply and make sense to them. And my favorite thing is really stripping out all of the jargon and all the complexity out of technology and making it really simple. Because something I think that happens in this space, in any technology space, is that, you know, folks throw around big words, they make themselves feel really smart, and they use them as gatekeeping mechanisms. And none of this stuff is really that hard. You know, if you can speak with any brilliant marketer right now, you know, all of the underpinnings of what's going on make sense to them in common marketing speak. We just need to strip away all the ridiculous words we use. So, you know, that's where I spent a lot of time helping people figure out, you know, if they mastered and owned Web 2 or they did that really well and they felt very confident there, you know, Web 3 is theirs to lose, but what does that look like? It's a little bit of a shift in mindset. Obviously talking a lot about AI right now, spatial computing, you know, those sorts of things. And yeah, really helping folks make sense of the future.
Making sense of the future. I really like that. Do you describe yourself as a futurist ever?
Technologist. I'm a chameleon. I'll take whatever, you know, whatever makes sense, whatever helps people understand what I do. I feel like often labels don't apply, but they're very useful to have something to look and point at and agree on. So yeah, technologist, futurist, nerd.
Nerd. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. 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 It's like, I should put that on business card.
I do remember you talking on your previous episode on here about collecting, was it hockey cards when you were a teenager?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. I mean, I collected everything. Everything. I think, you know, growing up, I had like a coin collection, stamp collection, hockey cards. I collected vinyl. I collected vintage guitars, vintage pedals. I mean, I've always been a collector of things.
Wow. Yeah. No wonder then you got into the kind of NFTs and digital collectibles.
Not very cool, but yes, digital collectibles made total sense.
Yeah.
Total sense to me. And I think that's what excites me the most about, you know, blockchain technology. I know we're going to talk about like what the heck is Web3. You know, it's a bit of a moving object at the moment, but what excites me is like an internet nerd, but also somebody who loves to collect things and own things in reality was this idea that, you know, in my version of the world, Web3, metaverse, whatever we end up calling it, this next era of internet will very much parallel reality. We're entering a more embodied internet. And in reality, I can own lots of things. I can own a house. I can own a car. I can own a hockey card. And there's, you know, despite best efforts, there hadn't previously been ways to mirror that digitally. And as we spend more and more time in digital spaces and digital worlds, it only makes sense that we would be able to own things the way that we do in reality. So yeah, that was the light bulb moment for me. It was like, you know, serialized hockey cards, serialized basketball cards. Great. That makes perfect sense.
Brilliant. And I want to touch briefly on the course that you're going to be running, The Future of the Internet, just because that sounds super, super interesting to me. So what is the course you'll be teaching and where? And then also tell me about what you mentioned briefly before to me on a call about the reaction that you want to have from students and like, what, I suppose, what you want out of holding this course.
Yeah. So I am teaching a course at McMaster University in Canada, digitally, online, this spring semester. It's called The Future of the Internet. And in order to talk about the future of the internet, we have to talk a little bit about the history of the internet, but really discussing and trying to hold space for the cultural impact of the internet, how we got here, where it's going, why that's interesting, how it intersects with who we are and identity, who it's built for, who it's built by, why that matters, and why the different business models of the internet have either been really exciting in different capacities or really challenging in different capacities. And I think my hope is that, you know, there have been great things about the first era of the internet. There's been great things about the second era of the internet. There's been really big drawbacks that are pretty obvious at this point, especially in the second era of the internet. And with students going out, you know, to build the future, my hope is that they will carry some of those learnings into what they're building and inevitably, you know, the future of the internet. I'm teaching it inside the humanities department, which is interesting. I think, you know, I'm a humanities grad. I'm a big believer in the humanities. I think that the humanities are going to be more important than ever moving forward because of the way AI works and because of the kinds of tasks that it will be able to alleviate from our workflow. And, you know, as it's able to do things like program better than we can or write copy or these sorts of things, I think the important skill set's going to be able to be creative, to dream, to imagine. And my gut says that most of those skill sets are curated in the humanities. So I think those skills are more important than ever. And my, you know, hope for humanities grads is that they'll look at some of the things that I've been able to do with a humanities degree that, you know, aren't completely expected perhaps, and find really rich and meaningful careers in technology too, because do we need more humanities grads in technology.
I really like that. And of course I would say that as a humanities grad myself.
What was your major?
I did linguistics with French.
Ooh. Oh, I think I knew that. Do you still speak French?
Barely, to be honest. I feel embarrassed of how bad my French is. I'd say my Brazilian Portuguese is slightly better, but
excuse us, Brazilian Portuguese is fancy.
Well, yeah, apologies, my Brazilian Portuguese, but the Portuguese that I know is basically sort of teenage like slang.
Okay.
So I can say like, what's up man, how's it hanging, along those lines in Portuguese, which is not something I'd ever say in English.
Oh, that's slick. That's real slick. My French is embarrassingly bad too. And living in Europe for the past decade, it's like one of the first questions people ask me when they hear I'm Canadian. They go, oh, does that mean you speak French? And I'm like, I got kicked out of grade 9 French and never took it again. Desperately tried to learn French actually, like 2 years after I arrived in the UK. And just like, turns out that's not how my brain works. I'm probably not going to be a linguist, as it turns out.
Well, I suppose, AI translation can do, we'll be able to do a lot of that anyway. So,
right? How cool is that? The superpower I have always wanted, if I could have any one, would be to speak and understand every language in the world. We're almost there. Like, for real, almost there. We didn't get flying cars, but we're going to be able to talk to anybody we want to very shortly.
I feel like I could very much go down a tangent of like AI translation and language, but just for the minute, I'm going to park that because I was going to ask you about, for your course, I remember you saying that you basically want people to not quite argue with you, but to like to push you.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, totally. So I think, you know, reflecting on why I really wanted to teach a course, you know, I think I would consider it incredibly successful if a second year student stands up and tells me to F off and that I'm an idiot and tells me exactly why. That would be like the greatest gift to me, because I think, you know, I'm going to get a lot out of turning knowledge into wisdom through teaching a course. But my belief is that young people are way smarter than me and I stand a lot more to gain and learn from them. And so, you know, in teaching a room full of younger folks, or, you know, traditionally younger folks, I'm really hopeful that we'll have some healthy debate and that I'll learn a lot from them and that they'll tell me why I'm wrong and I'm an idiot. And, you know, that'll be job done.
That's awesome. And okay, I feel like I have to ask about your business with Mila Kunis. As I said, I'm never going to get over that as a thing, the fact that you are the CEO and co-founder of a business with Mila. What's that been like? And because also that's kind of blending of like, you know, Hollywood and entertainment with the nerdy world of technology. So what's that been like?
I think that was the thing that was very attractive about it to me at the beginning was that, you know, I mean, I've danced around entertainment in varying capacities, but there is nobody better that I could be learning from in the entertainment space. So, you know, my brain is always on fire. I'm constantly learning. I'm, you know, able to be really curious and, you know, have a front row seat to some really interesting conversations about what entertainment looks like, and add from my perspective where I think technology is moving. And it leads to some very healthy debates about what the future looks like and the future where entertainment meets technology and where it's led by technology and where it's not and what could work and what couldn't. And so it's just a heck of a lot of fun. I've never had so much fun in my career as I have the past couple of years working with Mila, working with her producing partner, Lisa Sterbikov. It's just a great group of people. And I feel really blessed and really lucky to call them friends.
That's awesome. And her husband, Ashton, is quite a big sort of tech investor. Do you also have kind of a lot of overlap there?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, Ashton and Mila living in the same house is a great gift. You know, we get lots of interesting perspectives. Ashton's always very up and up on the newest, latest thing. And I think, you know, I don't know, I think Ashton's a nerd at heart, you know, really loves tech, has been incredibly successful there. And it's always interesting to get varying perspectives. So, you know, again, just feel so lucky and feel really blessed.
That's really cool. He was an investor in a startup I worked for literally over 10 years ago when I was living in Berlin for a year. I almost like falling down the Web3 rabbit hole. I kind of fell down the tech startups are amazing rabbit hole and also got completely obsessed with Berlin. And so moved there for a year and worked for loads of great startups. One of them was called Gidsy. It got acquired by Get Your Guide. I lost my job in the process, but it was super interesting proposition, I suppose. And Airbnb have now got the exact same model, which is basically being able to like book experiences with locals when you travel. So Airbnb, one of our partners back then, and like I say, got acquired, lost my job. I was also wearing a tiger onesie on the day that I lost my job. So
that's legendary.
I had some regrets at the time. It was
I don't know. I think that's pretty legendary. Like, what a boss. Goes into work, tiger onesie, gets walked out the door, tiger onesie, straight to the pub, I'd say.
I have a feeling I did do that.
Probably. You're English. At heart, you're English.
Yeah, I am English.
I mean, what else are you going to do when you get walked out the door in a tiger onesie but go to the pub?
Yeah, it was, this was when I was about 25, so it would have been my binge drinking era. So, okay, so I want to get into the kind of definitions of Web3, partly because I know that I enjoy talking about this stuff anyway. And as I've also mentioned on the podcast, I'm trying to sort of do what we can to broaden out this definition of Web3 rather than letting it only refer to things to do with tokens or like has to be purely about blockchain. What I'm interested in is this, like, as we've already been touching on today, is this kind of next major wave of like innovation and change. And so, you know, what are the opportunities and things that we can do with this tech? But then also, what's the impact for humans? Like, what does this actually mean for people, and especially women? So I'm interested to know how you are currently defining or not Web3 and where does that sit in your head, I suppose?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I feel like it is still a bit of a moving object. I think the one thing that is really clear for me is we are moving into a new era of internet. And like, obviously that's what's going to happen. You know, nothing is ever static. Things always change. They always move forward. Technology gets better. It gets more interesting. And there's a lot of like really interesting things and pieces that came together to, I think, create a moment where I'm starting to see and feel a really big shift. I think that crypto is one of them. I do. I believe that, you know, in a world where, you know, at one point we could only really read the internet and then we were able to read and write the internet, the ability to read, write, and own the internet becomes really interesting. And again, you know, my thesis always goes back to the idea that, like, you know, the future internet will parallel reality. In many ways, if we get this right, I hope that it becomes a very seamless experience, right? I think I've talked to you a little bit about my dismay that technology takes us out of a moment. And as a parent, you probably know this really well. You know, you're having a great time with your kid. They're doing something really cute or really funny. You're in that moment. You're really enjoying it. And then you want to capture it and you grab your phone from your pocket and you take, you know, you see a couple text message notifications on it or whatever else. You take the picture and you've come out of that moment with technology. And, you know, if we get the future right, I think we have just a much more seamless experience with technology where it complements our reality and it complements what we're doing. And it gives us a much more healthy relationship to technology and to the world. So that's a long way of saying that I think that, you know, one of the things that took us down some rabbit holes these past years is I think everybody became very focused, perhaps because of Facebook's big play there and their heavy narrative around VR. I think people became very invested in the idea that the future internet is going to be headset driven. And yeah, like that will be a way to access the internet, but it would be ridiculous to say that's the only way to access the new internet, because that would be like saying the only way to access, you know, social networks or social shopping or Amazon would be on your mobile phone. And we still drive a lot of desktop traffic. Do you know what I mean? So like, you know, it's a new device, but it's going to be one of many devices. And every marketer knows they've got to design different experiences for a multi-device world. That world will include televisions. It'll include gaming set boxes. It will include desktops, laptops, phones, yeah, headsets. But the one I'm the most excited for is AR, because I think that's where we're going eventually. And so in a world where technology and the internet becomes just much more immersed with reality, that gets really exciting for me. And I think that's where we're headed. And as part of that, inevitably, you know, I believe that ownership will be a big part of it. I hope that will start to straighten out some of the things that are a bit more challenging with the current internet. So things like, you know, the idea that right now you don't own any of your audience, you know, that can be taken from you at any time. Or that can just be shifted. One day your reach is X, the next it's Y, and you've got to pay more to reach the same number of people. Like those rules suck and they're not advantageous for creators. And I think there's a way in a tokenized world that we can change that. I also think that, you know, it's frustrating where, again, we're spending more time online, we're buying more digital goods than ever. And games are a really good example of this. If Fortnite or any of the video games people play change the rules of engagement, you don't own the assets you own. I mean, God, I don't even own the movies that I believe I own in Apple iTunes. I don't own the books I think I own through Kindle. Like truly, the terms of service tell me that like effectively I'm renting them. And I think it becomes a much more interesting space when it becomes more grounded in how we frame reality. And so, you know, a good example of this is like, how much effort do you put into your home when you're renting it? Not much. And your community, you know, it's like hard to want to truly invest because that's going to be ripped up. It could be ripped up at any time and inevitably you will move. If you own a house though, you're much more likely to put a lot of TLC into it, a lot of care. You're going to probably invest in your community. You're going to want your child's school to be really good. You're going to want to know the people at your coffee shop. You're going to want to plant flowers, make things beautiful, make them nice, because you can depend on it being there in the future. And so, you know, an internet where we can much more reliably trust the business models, the frameworks, the fact that things will be there and like the rules aren't going to be changed, I think it becomes really interesting and creates a situation where business can flourish and creators can flourish because they can trust the rules of engagement, if that makes sense.
I think that's super interesting. And I know that some creators talk a lot about building on borrowed land, but I don't know if that's something that the sort of general public know or care about in the same way. But actually, I think we need to be aware of it, that, yeah, any of these big, I guess, Web 2 technologies can usually be taken away from us at any moment.
Who's ever read a terms of service agreement? I just click yes because I have to. You don't even have a choice. You can't even use the product without. You can't modify. You can't like add some notes and send it back to the lawyers to go back and forth. It's like, if you want the thing, you just say yes. And we've all done it.
Exactly. So you're right that we are effectively renting our digital belongings.
And yet we have more and more of them, right? Like if you think back, okay, if I go back to my university years, how many DVDs did you have 15 years ago?
Yeah, quite.
A stack of them. How many CDs did you have years ago? Like books, all these things. And, you know, for lots of great reasons, we've gone more and more digital, mm-hmm. but we don't own what we think we own. I've got like, you know, dozens of films that I've purchased in Apple Music. Mm-hmm. That I don't really own. And, you know, at some point they will get removed. You know, like there'll be a licensing disagreement between a big studio and Apple and they won't have the right to distribute it there anymore or something like that. And I'll get, you know, I won't have it anymore. And it's just a bit bananas. And it's like, I don't think most people realize that they don't own what they think they own.
Exactly.
And that there are solutions. You know, there's now solutions. There's different ways we could start to framework that so that, you know, you truthfully owned it and could therefore, you know, do things with it. Again, that parallel reality. If I own a DVD in the real world, I might lend it to you. I can't lend you my Apple library. I might sell it to you. I can't sell it to you through my Apple library. And that just doesn't make much sense. It's just not how we've formed as humans and as humanity. It's just not how we work. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Because if you can fully own something, then you can also sell it on the secondary market. It's I was trying to explain to my toddler this morning that a program that we just happened to see fleetingly on TV, we don't also have it on Netflix because I think it was just like on a sort of BBC channel. So I couldn't put it back on. He obviously has no concept of like there being a sort of live TV that you're not in control of versus something like Netflix. He even knows the word Netflix and can press the Netflix button and sort of go navigate to whatever transport related car, program he wants to watch. But
this generation's not going to know that.
Exactly.
Like it makes total sense that he won't know that, you know?
Exactly. That we now can get whatever we want, whenever we want. But as you say, we don't ultimately own it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would you say are some hard truths you've learned from being in Web3 the last couple of years, 2-3 years?
Oh my goodness. How long do you have? this isn't an easy space, but doing new things is never easy. Yeah, none of it's as easy as I would like. And I think that's probably the hardest truth is that we are still quite far away from anything that resembles truly consumer products. I think that's hard. I think another thing that's really hard is how many disagreements and how many camps there are within the quote unquote Web3 space, and everybody's evangelical. Probably that parallels reality too, where we're so polar nowadays that there's no discussion, there's no middle point. You know, people get fundamental about everything. And I think that that is detrimental to the growth of this space. I think there's probably ways we could come together a little faster there. And I think it's been really hard to watch so many marketers and corporates and people get really excited about things a couple of years ago and then sort of switch tacks and go, okay, let's go after AI. That's over. When, you know, I believe those who are able to remain sort of dedicated and hold the line, are going to really be on the cusp of something very interesting. It means that people like me didn't do a good enough job of communicating strongly why this stuff's important, why it's relevant, why it's not going away, why it's the future. And, you know, it became seen as more of a fad, which is just not.
I agree with that. And that also articulates quite well why I've been almost like scared to broaden our definition of Web3 for women of Web3, because I suppose I've been scared that it's a rejection of the kind of purer sense of Web3, or that people that are still building purely in that space will see that as a rejection of me sort of, or, you know, women of Web3 saying that like, oh, now that the hype is over, we're not as interested. But it doesn't feel like that to me. Like I came in via a creative route, and that includes things like, you know, the metaverse or spatial computing, any of that, and headsets. And so I suppose I'm trying to stand true to that. But I do also think there is a lot of merit in people sticking by their values and principles and why they got into this stuff and continuing to build in exactly that stuff, because they do believe in the power of these technologies and the sort of philosophies behind it.
Totally. I think that, you know, where I've always seen you take up great space is just like future internet. And, you know, it's hard when you're building early, which you are very early. But you were particularly early when you launched the pod a few years ago. It's hard to rely on the words and the definitions then, because like, who could have seen Facebook coming in and renaming themselves to Meta? And who could have seen lots of the stuff that's gone on? But I do think that, yeah, I mean, regardless of what we call it, you know, you're definitely, you know, future internet institute in my mind, and doing like a lot of really great work and bringing, you know, people together around interesting concepts that are defining the future. So I see the challenge, and it's just such a moving target. Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite ready for a rebrand to Women of the Future Internet Podcast, but
let me know when you are. I like to, you know, pick up my marketing tools in my spare time, so we can brainstorm on that one.
I want to switch gears slightly to talk about, with moving targets and everything moving incredibly fast, as we've been saying, how we make time for ourselves touching grass, as you know, as an expression that gets used a lot in Web3, I suppose get in touch with reality. So I know that for you, you are making time to touch grass and sort of be in nature in your day-to-day life. So partly I really envy that, but also I'm wondering if you also find it a bit like I find with sort of parenting versus Web3, that they're so polar opposite, that I'm either looking at literally ants on the pavement outside our house to be like, mommy, come and look at these ants. And like, okay, you know, literally tiny real stuff. Or I'm talking about these quite sort of lofty concepts that don't necessarily have a, you know, physical counterpart or like a real thing you can point at. So How are you finding navigating that balance of sort of the ethereal and the real down in the dirt, real stuff?
It's hard, right? Like, we've all heard everybody talk about how important meditation is, how important taking time, you know, to unplug is. When I've done the work to better understand myself and look at what works for me and where I'm the most creative and inspired, I never come up with good ideas at my desk. Never. I'm always in motion. I'm always outside. There's always fresh air. It makes me a better partner, a better friend, a better human. It also makes me a way better business person to take breaks away from the desk, observe the world around me, understand how people are using technology in that space, and get, you know, dreamy about it. And so, you know, for me, I've been touching a lot more ocean than grass lately. I've been, water's always been really important to me. I'm a watery Pisces. This is a Women of Web 3 podcast that feels totally appropriate. We can talk astrology too. but I am learning to surf right now. I realized that I needed some discipline around getting out. You know, it's easy to sit here and be like, I know I should meditate more. I know I should be outside. And if I don't have things to be accountable to, I find it a struggle to make it happen. So I've been getting out surfing a couple times a week with a surf club and just trying to spend a lot more time, you know, in reality. The other thing is, like, you know, no matter how fast and far the internet evolves, no matter what kind of future internet we end up with, the most important place we have is this planet. And so we can throw all the technology that we want at it in the world. But if we end up with the quote unquote metaverse or future internet that they have in Snow Crash or Ready Player One, like, I don't even want to live in that world. And I don't want your kid to live in that world either. So, you know, I think it's really always helpful to use that as a framework and remind me that, you know, technology needs to be a service to me. It needs to be a service to us. What does that look like? How do we keep it real? How do we stay connected to one another in reality? You know, we talked a lot here about how amazing it is that the internet's connected us. And, like, I love that so much. And also meeting you in reality is even better. It's like, it's just so much richer. And so I like technology to be a complement to all of that. But I've really realized and really, you know, in becoming a better business person, tried to figure out what it is that makes me good at what I do and what inspires me and where I get my ideas from. And like I said, it's just not at my desk. Mm-hmm. So yeah, touching a lot of beach.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. Like I say, very envious of that you get all of that right on your doorstep. So thinking ahead to sort of later in 2024, what kind of thing have you either got coming down the pipeline or big juicy challenges you want to solve or, you know, ambitions for this year?
Yeah, I think so. Looking at, we will be releasing a Roblox experience later this year, where we're looking at a different way. We're looking to reverse engineer and sort of find different ways to create IP from immersive worlds. I think, you know, our idea is that the next Marvel will be built out of something like a Roblox, you know, and likely much more community built and co-created, et cetera. So that's really exciting. Releasing something there later this year, the IP called Armored Kingdom. Also looking at some, maybe not shockingly, some AI and content creations. So I think the world seems to be a little shook by what OpenAI has released with Sora this past few weeks, and really kind of interested in where video goes, why it will matter, if it will matter, who can create good stuff, how we will curate good stuff, what that looks like, how much of it will contribute to the build of feature films versus just like snackable internet type content. You know, that's really interesting. I'm really interested in where technology and the election in America that could go this year. I'm Canadian. I always feel like I need to preface that because, you know, maybe it's not my business, but I think American politics affect a lot of things. And I'm, you know, they've always been like a really good sort of weather vane for where the world's at technically with things like politics. So I've got a lot of interest in what's going on there. And then, you know, I have a couple clients that I'm working on a few things with in and around their brands and trying to figure out, you know, what technologies are going to be particularly interesting to them and how they protect and defend what they're doing in the next 6 to 12.
Only talking as near as 6 to 12 months, because I suppose we can't plan for much beyond that, can we? It is moving too fast.
And I think that's the biggest trick right now, is finding people that recognize that and are willing to stick with it for the ride, knowing that this is about being nimble and adaptive and sort of modifying, that there's no wrong answers right now. We make strong theses, we make strong you know, we make strong hypotheses, but then, you know, we got to be able to adapt in real time as the world starts to move, because there's only so much we can predict.
I really like that. We are constantly testing different theses. So finally, Lindsay, where can people find you online?
Online, I'm The McInerney, very difficult Irish last name, on Twitter. That's probably the best place to track me down. Admittedly, been spending a lot less time there since Twitter became X, which I refuse to call it. I'm going to hold on to that one for a while. But Twitter's the best place to track me down.
Okay, brilliant. So you're Lindsay Mack, and I will link all of that in the show notes. So thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed this chat.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. Please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps more women, more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to come and join our talent collective and get your profile seen by potential Web3 employers, or you can choose to be anonymous if you prefer. If you're a company that's looking to understand Web3 better, or you want to support women in this space, do get in touch with us on our website. And if you've got any questions, any comments, tweet us at womenofweb3co or find us on LinkedIn, and we'll see you next Tuesday morning.